with and its effect on DNSSEC. I'm thrilled to have both Jamie Headland with me from ICANN here and Patrick Fulstrom from Cisco and, of course, Chair of SSAC. And amongst this room as well, a whole group of DNS experts with us as well who I'm sure will chip in. So before we begin, just want to talk briefly about what are we talking about when we're talking about DNS filtering or DNS blocking. And I think just for clarity's sake, what we're talking about here is the use of some kind of technique somewhere in the DNS chain to interfere or block DNS resolution. Now, why might that happen? Well, there's plenty of reasons. There's plenty of reasons that it might happen for criminal activity. But in this case, we are seeing increasing pressure from national governments and bodies to tamper with the DNS, to particularly to deal with sites that have infringement of copyright or have content on them that's undesirable. And registries and DNS operators are starting to get the pressure from their national bodies to consider how do we implement some kind of DNS filtering and blocking. So it's an interesting topic in its own right, but clearly the relevance to today is what does that mean for DNSSEC and what does that mean for us? And we have two fantastic experts here who are going to talk us through it. So what would be great to do is hand over to Jamie briefly and bring us up to speed on where we are with legislation in both the US and Europe at the moment around this issue.
Thank you. Clearly there's somebody missing on the panel because I'm no expert, but but appreciate the introduction. I was just going to talk briefly about what seems to be the state of play in Washington, D.C. Sorry. Thank you, Jim. Is that better? Okay. So I was just going to talk briefly about the state of play in Washington, D.C., where there is pending legislation that would, under certain circumstances, require ISPs and name server operators to use DNS filtering to block access to illegal sites. This and it's something I think Patrick will talk more about, but it's something that's also being replicated around the world in litigation as well as legislation. At least starting as late in 2010, the Senate Judiciary Committee, which is the committee in the U.S. that deals with intellectual property issues, took up another legislative effort to enforce intellectual property rights. In this context, it was to block access to by U.S. users to illegal content, both domestically and in and abroad. There were two components to it in terms of the DNS. One was authorizing law enforcement to seize domains from domestic registries and registrars. That provision has since been dropped because they've decided that they already have authorization, no legislation is necessary. The second was in response to the domain name seizures, the content or conduct was being moved to offshore from the United States to non-U.S. registries and registrars. So the issue for the content industry, for trademark owners concerned about counterfeiting, was how do you block access to these sites and where the U.S. Law enforcement agencies do not have jurisdiction. So they came up with DNS filtering. I'm not going to go into the details about how a site is determined to be bad, but suffice it to say that there is a process, there would be a process to identify bad sites that are offshore, at which point the U.S. Department of Justice could go into court, get an order that effectively would be served on ISP names and name server operators to block IP resolution to certain names. Right now, the current state of play is how the Senate bill has been passed at the Judiciary Committee. There's a hold on it, which means it's not going further right now. The hold is only done by one U.S. senator now. The House Judiciary Committee is supposed to drop a bill today, it looks like, unfortunately, it's still going to have the DNS filtering provision in it. Within the U.S. administration, there are many folks who oppose this, not least of which the Department of Homeland Security, or parts of the Department of Homeland Security, which invested so much in DNSSEC, which is, Patrick will describe, is incompatible with DNS filtering. But there are other parts of the U.S. administration who are very sensitive to the concerns of the content industry and trademark owners, and think that DNS filtering is being used effectively now and should be expanded against these other sites. Thanks.
Thanks, Jamie. I wonder if you could just give us a quick overview of what you're seeing happening in Europe and the rest of the world around the same kind of legislation.
Sure. So again, Patrick, being from Sweden, probably has a better sense on that. But the few things I do know is the UK was their telecoms regulator, Ofcom, was required to look at the use of potential use of DNS filtering to block access to illegal content, and in part because of its incompatibility with DNSSEC, decided against it. I know there's been some litigation, the recent litigation in Belgium, which a court required the use of DNS filtering. Italy is also, Italian courts have also required it, and we've seen as a result of that many Italian users moving their name servers to Google and OpenDNS.
Got you, thanks. So if we take our DNS engineer's hat off for a second and we put our DNSSEC engineer's hat on, if there's such a thing, Patrick, why should we care about this?
Thank you very much. I think there are multiple reasons why we should care. First of all, there is a generic question on doing any kind of filtering or any kind of tampering with information that is flowing between two parties on the internet in the first place. And that is a human rights issue and freedom of expression and all those kind of things, which is discussed in many other forums than here. So we can leave that out. The second thing that we also, I think, don't have to talk about here is that Jamie also mentioned that we do have to have some kind of filtering implies that you need to have some kind of list and some kind of decision-making process that as a result of that process, you come up with a list of what you should block, what is dangerous, what is bad. Okay? We don't have to talk about that either here. Okay? But these are very important issues that we cannot ignore in the whole process. Because, and unfortunately, there are many parties that are ignoring or they are intentionally trying to mix these issues up. So let's start with the assumption that we do have a list of things we want to block or we would want to limit the access to. The next problem is, what kind of tools should we use? And the problem that we see, that I see in all of this, is that they, as the people that draw their own conclusions, they immediately draw their conclusion, let's use the DNS. Okay, why is the DNS a bad tool, and why is it specifically bad with DNSSEC? That's the context. Now, if it is the case that someone is doing blocking using the DNS, that implies that one of two things happens. Between the end user or that do the lookup and the authoritative server, there is something that either completely blocks the response or the query to pass between these two parties, or you have something that, for example, changes the response to something else than what was in the authoritative source. That is what I mean by blocking one of these two things. In both of these cases, when we use DNSSEC, the whole idea with DNSSEC, at least if the change is happening on the return path, is that whoever is doing validation of the signature on the DNSSEC response will detect that something has happened. That's the whole idea. So you have DNSSEC as a tool that we use to detect that something has been changed, and we do the blocking, which by design is changing things. These are two different, completely orthogonal things that, given that we have blocking, should happen in the network. When we have these orthogonal things, the only way of doing it in a way so that it sort of, from a technical point of view, works, is to do the blocking and the validation in the same node. So the algorithm that you're using is actually done. You have one algorithm that decides whether you're going to use a domain name. And as we from ESSAC said, the only way when you do these kind of calculations on what kind of impact blocking will get, it is very important that the blocking, if you're going to do anything like that, is happening sort of as close to the edge of the network as possible. People can do it in their virus software, in their policy list, in their browser. Some enterprises do it in their firewall or something like that. But the further away you come away, or the further, the more broad the blocking is happening, specifically when we're talking about blocking happening and impacting your own administered domain and wider, that's a very big difference, etc. So it's because we have this conflicting interest and conflicting technical tools, that's why we have a problem.
Okay, so let's assume for a minute that I'm browsing the web and I decide to browse to a site that's infringing copyright, and DNSSEC is enabled, and also DNS filtering has been enabled and blocking by the national government. So I try to go to the site, and of course DNSSEC is going to break because it's going to redirect me. The chain of trust is broken, and my browser is probably not going to come back with anything. Surely that's okay, right? Because I wasn't able to get to the copy to the material that was infringing copyright. Whereas when I go back to a legitimate site, sure enough, the chain of trust works, and I get through to the site. What's the problem there?
Well, I think the problem has to do with how much the end user and how much people are trusting the DNS and trusting DNSSEC. And I think the overall intention with the use of the internet, and for example, if we talk about services that helps the growth of society, like banking over the internet and other kind of services that helps the BNP of a country to grow, all of those things relies on people trusting the internet and trusting the tools that exist there. So, of course, and if it is the case that people are starting to do lookups that fails because DNSSEC fails or DNS fails, that decreases the trust from the end user, and the end user will get an interest of trying to circumvent things, or they will not start to use these new tools that actually helps us to be more effective. And that is a very bad impact on the society as a whole.
So do you think if this were to be implemented, there's a likelihood that people would start to use plugins like MafiaFire for Firefox and everything else to effectively undermine the very DNS itself?
We absolutely. And then people say, oh, why should that happen? Is it not only people that are hackers or interested individuals or whatever? And I say, no, absolutely not. We already have indication that in some, like, emerging democracy and others, this is exactly what people do if people are trying to limit the ability for people to express their opinions. It is already happening. This is not something that is in the future.
Okay, so we've got a room full of engineers here. Surely there's a solution to this where DNSSEC and filtering can coexist. Is that possible?
I think that. And I think it's possible, and I think. But on the other hand, I think it only works if it is the case that, first of all, the end user or whoever is responsible for the local administrative domain is, first of all, choosing where to do validation. And all of us, I think, agree that it should happen, like, here in my computer. So I make a choice. The same way, I can make a choice, for example, what I am not calling now, intentionally not calling blocking service or blocking advice. I would call it like repudiation service, just like we have for email. I choose myself what kind of sort of antivirus software I'm going to use, what kind of culture values or whatever to protect, to like, what are the things I want to be protected from. I make the choice. I implement that, I do the settings in my browser, and then sort of when you do validation and this reputation service calculation in the same place at the edge of the network, then it could work, but not imposing block or anything on the third party.
Got you, thanks. Okay, so as many of you may or may not be aware, a group of very interested engineers got together and drafted a letter to the House of Congress, and they also created a very large document, which you can download, which explains a lot of what Patrick has been saying. We'll send the link out shortly to this. It's a very, very good read. Jamie, has this been taken seriously by the U.S. administration?
So yes, they've been very helpful. The authors of the white paper, as well as the letters to Congress, have been helpful in making the technical argument. With many, unfortunately, with others, it's almost beside the point. All that they see is that there is IP theft going on online, which is absolutely true, and that they unfortunately don't have the level of technical expertise or interest sometimes in understanding it. What they want is an expedient solution, which is understandable given that given the amount of IP theft that's been going on the internet. What I would say about the Protect IP bill is that there are two other measures that are part of that bill which really are effective and have been effective in other contexts, and they are provisions designed to go after, to cut off the revenue stream. My understanding, and according to proponents of the bill, there really are a relatively small number of bad guys out there who have to make sufficient money in order to fund their expenses for bandwidth and colocation and back office services and all the rest. So, by contrast, there are 14 million open domain name servers around the world. There are billions of internet users around the world. When you try to target that, you're not going to get everyone. It's not going to be effective. You go after the bad guys. So some of the best ways of going after the bad guys that's been effective in the U.S. in the online gambling context is cutting off the revenue stream. So the provisions going after payment processors and ad networks make eminently a lot more sense. They just want a technical fix as well, and they think that there's this perception that it will be effective because not many people will try to circumvent it.
Got you. Okay. So really, just one final question to both of you. I imagine there'll be people in this room who will be facing similar pressure at some stage over the coming months to implement or to consult. Certainly in the UK, we've been asked by our regulators to say, "Well, we'd like your opinion on what happens if we brought filtering in." So we're seeing it. I'm sure some of you will do. What would you recommend that people take away from this and consider as next steps on this issue?
I think the first important thing is to try to explain to people that it is a multi-stage process to come up with a secure and safe system that do anything like blocking of any kind. Once again, it consists of having a safe, trustworthy process that comes up with a list of what should be blocked. And even that is really, really difficult. And you should look at that from a human rights perspective of freedom of expression. There are discussions going on in the Human Rights Council in Geneva as we speak. Really, really difficult. The second thing is, given that you have that list that everyone in your community, in your country, trusts, the next question is, what do you do given that you have that kind of list? And you should absolutely look at various different kind of voluntary solutions. Isn't that the way it should be resolved? What kind of other kind of mechanism are there that actually hits that specific list and nothing else? What kind of tools should you use? And I would claim that if you have that discussion, you will not come to the result that DNS is the tool that you should use.
I completely agree with that. And what's been lacking in the United States is a forum for an honest technical discussion with experts in the room, and that needs to happen before moving forward with any technical solution. It happens to be that this one is a really bad one, but if there is a place where industry experts, technical experts, content IP interests can get together and examine these things honestly, rather than rush to enact legislation, that would be very helpful. And that is, by my understanding, that is the approach that was taken in the UK. I mean, Ofcom sat down and for a long time whittled away at a report and did the appropriate analysis.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they're taking a slightly different approach to it, which is good, and we welcome that. But I certainly don't think it's the last we'll hear of the issue in the UK. Thank you both for that. I'd just like to we're running a little short on time, but I would like to open that just to see if anybody has any questions about this issue, would like to raise it to the panelists when we have them here.
if nothing else, I'm happy to talk to people about this. I'm here all until Friday evening, so just try to find me, and I'm happy to have a chat with you about it.
Great. Well, okay, just it remains to say thank you very much to Patrick Fulsham and Jamie Hillen for some fantastic comments. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. So we're going to move along quickly to the next part of the program, and that is the DNSSEC in the wild. So I'd like to ask our next two presenters to come up here to the table, and let me go ahead and cue up the slides. But before I do that, I just want to welcome our two speakers here. We have with us Jim Galvin from Afilias that you've heard a little bit earlier today, but he'll be speaking on something a little bit different here as part of this presentation. And we have Emiliano Casalicchio, and he's from the Global Cybersecurity Center, and he also has a topic of interest, a great interest to introduce you as well. So I'm going to go ahead and start with Jim, and I'll bring your slides up momentarily.
So while she's getting the slides up, I'll just say that this is just a bunch of numbers. And I say that because even from our point of view, it's difficult to draw conclusions from the numbers that I'll present. It's similar to the numbers that you've seen earlier today from other folks. They're just not very big. We did pick three separate days in the recent past over the last 8 weeks to draw some numbers out. So if there's even a minor conclusion to draw, it's just that there's a slight trend upward. And that's about as much as one can say about it right now. So next slide, please. Just a little bit of recorded history here. So .org is the largest TLD that we host as a registry service provider. It was offering signed delegations a little over a year ago, so it's been about 16 months now since we've had a number of the first signed delegations. The root, of course, was signed a month after .org started offering its signed delegations. These are the three dates in time that we chose to look at some statistics. They were just convenient for us. And just because I had some time to put in a couple extra charts, we take a look at IPv4 versus IPv6. A lot of people seem to care about that, so we just toss that in there, too. Next slide, please. Okay, so the only real three TLDs that are identified here are Info, MOBI, and Org. And this is a little bit hard to look at, but bottom line here is there's a lot of IPv4 queries by TLD for each of these 3 days. I think you can look at that yourself. The slides are online. Let's go to the next slide. It's interesting to see that we get as many as 5% of the queries coming in on an IPv6 origin. But on average, we're talking about 3% or less for most TLDs, and some are even lower than that. So just an interesting look at overall. This is total number of DNS queries that come into our infrastructure and how they break down. Next slide. So this is a look at DS queries as a percent of the total for overall each of those TLDs down at the bottom. I'm looking at people looking at the slide, just giving you a moment to look at the slide. There's not really much to say about it. I'm sorry?
It's like 1%.
Yes, it's like 1%. The average is around 1%. So we're not getting very many queries overall. 1% of the queries overall are for DS records. Next slide, please. This just ranks them. So it takes the last day, the October 7th day, shows the chart moving on down. And you can see that even for us, org is third, info is fifth, and MOBI is negligible. It barely registers in terms of how it ranks in this. But again, you can see the 1% a little more clearly here. And so next slide. This is a look at DS queries and IPv4 versus IPv6 for DS queries. So you can see that there is obviously the vast majority of them really do belong to IPv4, but we are seeing some IPv6 queries. And so just an interesting look at some data. Next slide. In this particular case, key queries, there were so few IPv6 queries for the .org key that they just can't even show up here. And you can see how small a number it is in terms of, even on IPv4, how many key queries there are. Now, in contrast to what Nominet was showing for .uk, our key TTL is a day. So he had a key TTL of 5 minutes. And you can see that that makes a dramatic difference in the number of queries that one gets. And that's just an operational choice in how we do that. Next slide, please. This is the total number of signed delegations. We only show for .org here, and that's because .org is really the only TLD that has any absolute number that's worthy of showing you a size. But you can see going back to November of 2010, and coming forward to October 1st here of 2011, we're now up to just over 1,300 signed delegations in .org. And you can see that percentage is itself still less than 1/100% of the overall zone. .org has pretty close to 10 million domains under management. And the next slide. This is just a look at a few. There are some. Didn't put any of the TLDs, the other TLDs, on the previous slide. They're all quite small. So the percentage for some actually comes up, but you can see that a few of them, just as .uk is the number one signed protected zone. Is that the phrase we're using? Because you're 50% of them are signed, right? Yeah, percentages have a way of showing nice numbers. So that's why .org comes in fourth over here. Okay, and that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jim. Why don't we move along to Emiliano, and then we'll save time for a few questions after both of the presentations are done. I'll pull up the slides shortly. Thank you.
So, good afternoon. I'm Emiliano Casalicchio. I'm a researcher at the University of Rome, and I'm also associated with the Global Cybersecurity Center. And today, I will give you an overview of the MENSA project that is intended to define a framework to measure the level of DNS health and security. And in this short presentation, I will provide you also an example of two DNS security-related metrics. Next slide, please. So everybody agree that the DNS is an ubiquitous infrastructure, but is not commonly known that critical infrastructure operators need a framework that allow to quantify the impact of the DNS in the assessment of their level of security and resiliency. And at the best of our knowledge, it's not possible today to answer questions such as, okay, I'm a critical end user, and I would like to know if the recursive resolver I'm using is secure enough. Or, for example, if we consider critical transaction, how can we identify the portion of the transaction that security level that depend on the DNS, and how we can quantify this this security level or this performance level, or for example, how I can benchmark the portion of the DNS I depend on, and more important, can I identify the perimeter of the portion of the DNS I depend on. And also, another question that we will try to face is that critical process and services have non-functional requirements that have to be satisfied, and we would like to identify what, if, how and if the DNS will impact this non-functional requirement. And finally, we know that the DNS is robust, but we would like also to know if it's possible to improve it to reduce costs, or if it's possible to optimize more the DNS. Next slide. So the Mensa project that that we are working on is intended to provide a methodologies and tools to answer these questions. And the final results of the Mensa project will be a dashboard customizable depending on the user needs. And the building blocks for this dashboard are measurement tools that are needed to collect data, metrics that are needed to extract knowledge from data, and of course models that can be useful to conduct risk and impact analysis, or to conduct what if analysis and interdependency analysis. And of course the definition of the definition and the refinement of the models and metrics will be done considering the use cases, the threat scenarios that are given by the final user of the framework. Next slide. So right now we identified 29 DNS health metrics and 16 security metrics, and we have categorized these metrics along the four main vulnerability of the DNS, four main class of vulnerability of the DNS, and we have also refined this taxonomy considering the different observation point can be used to measure and to compute these metrics. Next slide. So, two security-related metrics we proposed and we measured are the cache poisoning probability measured from a recursive resolver point of view, and the DNSSEC query size and speed measured from the end user's point of view. So the first metric, the cache poisoning probability, should allow to assess the level of security versus the poisoning vulnerability at the recursive resolver, and the size and speed of query measured from the end-user point of view are useful to understand how non-functional requirement of control processes in critical infrastructure operation are impacted by the introduction of DNSSEC. Next slide. To measure the cache poisoning probability, the first set of experiments we do is to issue 6,000 queries through our recursive resolvers, and then in parallel we also generate these queries through 27 resolvers distributed over 9 countries, and we measure that the 99% of query and of of recursive resolver are consistent. And in particular, of the total queries we generate, we receive only 72% of correct answer, and all other queries are not answered or carried on a bad answer. Then, after this measurement that we conduct to have a baseline. Next slide, please. We inject 10% of poisoned records into our cache, and this number of poisoned records are randomly generated, and we again compare the content of our cache with the with the content, with the answer from the recursive resolvers. And we are capable to measure the 9.88% of poisoned record. So this means that with this metrics, we are capable to measure the right number of poisoned record. The only problem and open point is how to show the trusted recursive resolver to perform this comparison and to have a correct answer of how many records are inconsistent or how many records are has been poisoned.
Next slide.
For what concern the DNSSEC query sites and related response time, we issue 22,000 query, and we characterize the cumulative distribution function of the sites of the queries, and also we measure the cumulative distribution function of the response time. Of course, when the sites depend only on the DNS protocol, the response time is depend on all other protocols in the internet stack. And so it's not a measure that depends only on the DNSSEC. But this measure can be useful to identify, for example, if the constraints of control critical process are satisfied. And if we consider the power grid control and the access and the remote access to SCADA systems that is performed through the DNS and that could be performed to the DNSSEC, the 20% of cases, the timing requirement cannot be satisfied. So to conclude, so we are aware that the community is dealing since a long time with the problem to measure the DNS and that the single actor, ISP, registry, root server operator are capable to measure and to control their infrastructure. But what we are looking for is a more global view of the DNS systems and a way to cover with perspective that are not usually considered. And so the MENSA project is working in this direction.
Next slide.
So if you would like further information about the project, you can go to the Global Cybersecurity Center website. And this is the project team and the advisory board of our project. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Emiliano, and thank you, Jim. So we have time for just a couple of questions. I'll open it up for questions now. Anyone, please? Obviously, the information that Jim and Emiliano provided was so clear and so complete that let's please join me I see a question.
We just wanted Roy to have something to do.
How many engineers does it take to hand a mic to someone?
No, 2.5.
Please identify yourself.
Jacques Latour with Dottier. If you go back to slide 7, it says like 9.8 of the traffic is corrupted according to your tests. My question is, did you actually send live data to all of those countries with poison information?
No, we poisoned our recursive resolver, and we used these recursive resolvers as our reference measure. So we suppose that this could be trusted recursive resolvers and that someone attacked our cache to introduce some poison. So this is the measurement that we do.
Thank you.
So because we do not have control or agreement with other country recursive resolvers.
Thanks.
Any other questions? All right, then. Please join me in thanking Jim and Emiliano. And then we'll move to the final presentation today. This is the presentation, Long-Term Consequences of DNSSEC Deployment in IPv6, with Lutz Donnerhacke.
So, yeah. Hands up. Who has a mobile phone? Who has a smartphone? I will see the smartphones now here. One, two. Only a few people has a smartphone. Okay. Remember, you are the guys destroying our intranets. And I will explain you why. Let's start. What is an intranet? First slide, please. When we are going to build a network as a technical people, we are confronted with some political issues saying, we can't put these information outside, we have to keep inside. And a few hours later, somebody is crying, we need the data in the subsidiary somewhere else. And 2 days later, somebody comes up and cries about an external people which needs immediately right access to the same data. So we are building up networks which are extended, they are scattered over the world, but they try to keep a local environment. Such environments we are calling intranets. In order to do this, we had developed a lot of technologies like NAT, network address translation, split DNS, so we have a different in and outside view to the names and numbers. And we, of course, we are building VPNs, all in order to provide a local infrastructure which is separated from the global one. In order to have access from the global network to the local one, we map data, map addresses. Port forwarding is a common term for such things. And the most important point, if you are setting up a Windows network, a modern one with an Active Directory, you ask for a domain name. This is a real domain name. And if you are entering the default, you are making a local root. Okay, next slide, please. That's what happens if we are starting to do an intranet. We have a big bad internet outside. We have a DMZ, which translates between external and internal world. And we have trustworthy networking. I used green lines for in order to display that we can trust our local networks. Okay, next slide, please. And now our concrete is hit it twice. The first impact comes from the IPv6. IPv6 destroys a lot of our assumptions. First assumption is that we have internal addresses. We do not have internal addresses anymore. We have public addresses. And the second more important point is, if we are going to have in public address, protocols attend to use them. That can be problematic. It can not only be problematic, it is problematic. If we are going to have a look at modern protocols, we will see that they collect a lot of scattered information from a lot of places, and if all these servers have an IPv6 address, they can be reached directly over the internet. That's the assumption. So IPv6 destroys our assumption that we have a local world. Next slide, please. And now we have another asteroid. He removes our local root. We do not have it. And the decisions made here, if we are going to deploy DNSSEC, it simply means that our local managers has to accept decisions made at ICANN. we at ICANN made the decision to have a single well-known key in the root zone. We at ICANN made the decision to have a single local root, a single global root, a single root at all. And the consequence is that we have to fulfill this for all local networks. Even more problematic is that large companies like Microsoft are going to deploy this. They depend on having the same internal and external network. If you are going to set up, for instance, direct access VPN network, the first thing they are doing is looking up a name from the local Active Directory. And if you are not able to provide an answer, you can't connect to your network. So your local AD server has to be reachable from the outside and has to respond to DNS queries. Okay, next slide. And now, for all these people here going to destroy everything, your smartphones will change the world. Such smartphones are not configurable. Think about having the well-known key hard-coded in these smartphones. And think about having a connection from a hotel. Will not work if somebody is fiddling about the DNS. It will not connect to your local networks. It will not accept your local Active Directory. It will not accept your local system. And even more, if you do not provide IPv6 to them, they will organize them itself. We have a lot of transition technologies there, and they will get a workable public IP address, unless you provide one to them. So, next slide. What we can do as a technical people here is, first, we have to accept that we have IPv6 at the moment. All we can do is to filter it. We have to provide firewalls, we have to insert some filters there, but we can't hide anymore. This first thing we had to accept. The second what we had to accept is if we can't hide and we are using public IP addresses, we have to provide a common routing infrastructure. We have to decide at technical device which networks are reachable over which way. That's very simple. And then we had to decide how to deal with the other problems. If we are going to have different addresses inside and outside, simply because we are just sticking on legacy address spaces, then we have to use split DNS. It's possible with DNSSEC. Simply put two DS entries to the parent, one for the internal, one for the external view. It's very, very simple. There's no problem. But what we really have to do is to find out all these legacy hardware, collecting it together, removing it, replacing it. And if we can't do this, make a local network, make a label on it. If it's in use 10 years, in the next 10 years, remove it without question, and encapsulate all these legacy devices in such networks. Next slide, please. Then we had a situation where we can use IPv6 addresses in the networks. We have VPN tunnels. And you see, we have a problem with our horrible clients. They are connecting to our local networks using a green wireless network. At the same time, they are able to connect to the outside world. Who has the opportunity or the possibility to filter packets and this area here? Nobody. You can't even prevent a cell phone company from sending their waves in your houses and your companies. It was tried for the politicians here in the room for the gag. It was tried to prevent access of electromagnetic waves to cross borders. We had a decision from the European Court in 1948 that says that every country in the European community has no right to prevent
electromagnetic waves to cross the border, just for the record, for the gag. Next slide, please. So what we can do if we are accepting those impacts, what we have to expect and what we have to accept is that we have direct end-to-end communication at a final place. That our managers are coming to us and saying, I have a mobile device here, and if I connect it to my cell phone provider, I have a different view than if I'm using the local network here. It can't be true. We have to fix this. We have to have the same appearance if we are coming from a local network or from a global or an external network. So we have to remove the VPNs. They are not usable anymore. We have to go to some user-based identification schemes, might be RESTful web services. And therefore, we have to move the board of security from networks to hosts. Yeah, if you are thinking about clouds, we have to move it to the data because we can't secure a server which we do not own. But what we get is that we have DNS as a trustworthy resource. We can go and ask a question, I have a name here. What's the address? What's the resources behind? What's the key for the SSL communication? A lot of things we can answer, and we can rely on the answers. And that's very important because it allows us to make direct communication and make a new and might be a better world. Next slide, please. Which might have a look like this. We have direct connectivity to the internet everywhere, every place, as it was in the early 80s. Next slide, please. So what we have to do now is to convince our managers that they have to accept that we are going to a different world here, that we can't hide anymore. We can't hide our systems anymore, that we have to give up a centralized approach. We go to decentralized approaches at almost every place, and that we, that's the most important point for the technical people, they can't trust that technology anymore. They have to move from their warm and fuzzy places and their local networks and cubicles to a harsh world out there, and they have to concentrate on their real problems, the data of the company, the data which needs to be communicated, and which people are working in the company. It's important that you identify the people and allow them to do something with the data instead of assuming that everybody who has access to a building has access to every data in this building. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lutz. And we do have some time for a few questions before we wrap things up. So I'll open it up to the floor. No questions. Then, wait. I see some questions. Great. All right. We'll get you a microphone here in a second. Thanks.
Bonsoir. Je m'appelle.
Good evening. My name is Brahundi. I come from Senegal. You spoke about the DNSSEC and the cloud. I know cloud is a future technology that is going to be used in the future, but I want to know what is DNSSEC and what can IPv6 give in security for the future? Thank you.
DNSSEC is transforming a probability-based
hierarchical database as DNS is at the moment into a trustworthy resource. So if you get an answer from the DNSSEC-enabled system, you know that you have the right answer. The answer was was inserted in the system in the very first place. And even if a lot of people and machines are involved in the meantime, nobody has the possibility to change the answer and we get the correct answer. So we can build a lot of trust on such systems, and we can make protocols more reliable, and we can make the internet more stable in this case.
I'm Eddie from Rwanda. By the presentation that you made, it seems as if, I'm not sure I understood properly, but it seems as if though we have internal resources, they will look as if they are in the cloud, even within our own networks. Is it correct or I miss a point?
It's a transition process. At the moment, we are having a lot of data locally, but we are currently moving it into cloud services. You just look around. Ask how many people has a Google email address. Ask how many people are using Google Docs or Microsoft Azure platforms. Ask how many people have an Amazon-based computing system or something like this. And then you get an impression how many people are currently moving their data from their local services into the cloud.
Yeah, but then what about big corporations who have historically lived within their own walls and not allowing people to go in? Do we have a chance to see these guys sticking to IPv4 or not even adding all these layers, or it will be a mistake for them to stick in those policies?
I do not see any chance for anybody to stick on old addresses. It might be work for the next few years, but we already have customers in Europe where we still have enough IPv4 addresses left. We still have customers which are working IPv6 only.
Any more questions? Then I would like to first please ask you all to join me in thanking Lutz for his presentation. And now I'd like to turn over the end of the program to Simon McCullough from Nominet.
Thanks, Julie. I just want to close and by saying on behalf of the program committee, just a huge thank you to all of our speakers and participants today. That's been really fantastic, so thank you, everybody. I also will say the questions that we've had over the last day and also the DNS beginner session, I think have been some of the best we've ever had in terms of participation and people getting involved. So thank you very much, everybody who's attended. We've certainly really enjoyed that. Just remains to say, I'm sure I speak on behalf of all of the presenters and the program committee to say if you would like further help, you would like further advice on implementing DNSSEC, you'd like to know more or dig into any more of the topics, we would all be very, very glad to help. Our contact details, I'm sure, Julie, we can circulate. We'd be delighted to work with any of you to help you get DNSSEC enabled for your top-level domain. So all that really remains is I just want to add a couple of bits of thanks about today. Firstly, I'd like to thank our translation staff over here who do an amazing job of translating the DNSSEC gobbledygook into something intelligent. So, and finally, I speak for the whole committee to say the single hardest working person on the committee has to round up all the sheep, herd all the cats, get all the presentations to the right place, get us to the right room, find us a lunch, make sure we know where we're going, is Julie Headland. So thank you very much, Julie, for all your work. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Simon. And we ended early. And so there you are. You have a couple more minutes in your day. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.